Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available 20-minute samples of recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new sample podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. In addition, you can access the full-length version of this and all NACSW podcasts at no cost simply by becoming a member of NACSW or by ordering a copy of this podcast at a reasonable cost on NACSW's online bookstore. We hope you enjoy today's sample podcast.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. It is a pleasure for me to stand to be able to introduce our speaker for tonight, Ms. Lisa Sharon Harper. She's a speaker, an activist, an author, an award-winning playwright, a poet, and an extraordinary organizer. Currently Sojourner's Chief Church Engagement Officer, Ms. Harper previously served as the founding executive director of New York Faith and Justice. In that capacity, she helped establish faith leaders for environmental justice, and she also organized faith leaders to speak out for immigration reform and organized the South Bronx Conversations for Change. She is also a renowned author. Her writing has been featured in the National Civic Review, God's Politics blog, the Huffington Post, Relevant Magazine, Pathos.com, Urban Faith, and Prisms, where she has written extensively on so many topics, including, start counting, tax reform, comprehensive immigration reform, health care reform, do you hear a theme, reform? Poverty, racial and gender justice, and transformational civic engagement. Ms. Harper has authored several books. She earned a master's degree in human rights from Columbia University in New York. One of her books is entitled Left, Right, and Christ: Evangelical Faith in Politics. This book was co-written. She also wrote a book entitled Evangelical Does Not Equal Republican or Democrat. Sounds amazing, right? Finally, Ms. Harper is an organizer. She co-founded and co-directed the Envision 2008, the Gospel, Politics, and the Future conference on the campus of Princeton University, and co-chaired the Envision 2011, Caring for the Community of Creation, Environmental Justice, Climate Change, and Prophetic Witness Symposium in New York City. We have an award-winning speaker with us tonight. She was the recipient of Sojourner's inaugural Organizations Award and the Harlem Sisters of Wisdom Award. She was celebrated by Rick Warren's website, purposedriven.com, as one of the site's inaugural 7 Take Action Heroes. Was named number 5 of the top 13 women to watch in 2012 by the Center of American Progress. And she was awarded the 2013 Faith and Justice Leadership Award by the National Black Women's Roundtable. She was recently awarded the National Council of La Raza Capital Award for Public Service for her participation as a core faster in the 2013 hashtag Fast for Families initiative. The purpose was for immigration reform, and she was recently recognized as one of the 50 powerful women religious leaders to celebrate on International Women's Day. And this was from the Huffington Post. Isn't she awesome? Please join me in welcoming Ms. Lisa Sharon Harper, who is in the current ordination process with the Evangelical Covenant Church, and who will share powerful words with us this evening. Thank you so much.
Good Thank you. Wow. I sure hope I can live up to that. Let me just say, I am really honored to be here with you tonight. I have been looking forward to this night for a couple of years. When we first heard from Rick and then later from Joe, I think it was about 2 years ago. And so I'm actually kind of amazed that the night is here. It's happening. Oh my goodness. And I'm also amazed at what has happened since then. Because we are seeing a huge shift. Just in the last month alone, in the last 2 weeks, I've been in about four different cities. And I've been doing trainings and speaking, and I'm seeing an open window. Seeing an open window where there's a felt need to deal with something that we have not wanted to deal with for the last 60 years. That the window closed on dealing with the issues of race about 50 years ago with the death of Dr. King. And now it's beginning to open again. And I think that it was the death of Trayvon Martin, the exoneration of George Zimmerman, the death of Michael Brown, the exoneration of his police assailant, and then the death of Eric Garner and the exoneration of his police assailant that has convinced society something is wrong. Something is wrong here. And so, no matter what you think about those individual cases, I think we can all agree that when hashtags become normative, something is wrong. And so tonight, I've been asked to speak about shalom and loving your neighbor locally and nationally. So we're going to talk. Can we talk here?
Yeah.
Can we talk here? And I need your permission to go there, because we're going to go there tonight.
Go there.
Okay?
Go there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So tonight, we're going to go there. And we're going to go first to Genesis. I have been soaking in Genesis for the last 12 years. I took a journey called the Pilgrimage for Reconciliation about 12 years ago. It was through a nonprofit organization, a college ministry that I was a part of. And this pilgrimage took us through 10 states. Northern states, we retraced the Cherokee Trail of Tears. And through the southern, the Deep South, we retraced the African experience in America from slavery to civil rights. And we came to the end of that journey, and after soaking in some of the most evil experiences in American history, I looked at my understanding of what the good news of the gospel was, and I was mute. My gospel was mute. My understanding of what was good news was mute, because my understanding of the gospel had Jesus and me, and that was it. That was the good news. I get to go to heaven. But I'll tell you what, I imagined myself at the end of that journey sharing that good news with my own ancestors who slaved in South Carolina and saying, hey, this is good news. You get to go to heaven if you accept Jesus as payment for the penalty of your sin. And asking them, is that good news to you? While they are sitting there in chains and watching their daughter get sold away or raped. And I asked myself, is that good news to my ancestors? Is that good enough? And it was not. And so over the last 12 years, I've been soaking in the biblical concept of shalom. And so I'm going to share with you briefly three words that I believe are critical to understanding the significance of our core text tonight, which is Matthew 25, 31 to the end. So let's go briefly to Genesis 1. In Genesis 1, I want to draw out three words. One of those three words is actually not a word, it's a phrase. Very good. It's what God calls creation at the end of the sixth day. At the end of that sixth day, you get God looking around and saying, yo, this is very good. Right? Now that word good, according to the Hebrews, they would not have understood the word goodness or the word good, tov. They wouldn't have understood that as having the goodness exist inside the self, the thing itself. They would have understood goodness as existing between things. That's key. And that word mechod, it actually means overflowing, abundant, vehement, forceful. Even, you could even say violently good. Imagine, God looks around at the end of the sixth day and God says, this is forcefully good. Meaning that the relationship between things are forcefully good. The relationship between humanity and God is forcefully good. The relationship between men and women is forcefully good. The relationship between humanity and the systems that govern us are forcefully good. The relationship between us and ourselves, forcefully good. There's no such thing as shame yet. The relationship between us and life itself is forcefully good. There is no death in the world yet. Now, you jump back in the text and you see a little earlier on that same day, at the pinnacle, this is the pinnacle of the creation poem. It's an epic poem, epic Hebraic structure. And at the pinnacle of it, God says, let us make humankind in our image according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. And God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And he blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and you get the point. Now, the word image is the next word I want to bring out. That word image is actually in the Hebrew, it's the word tselem, T-S-E-L-E-M. And that word, it means representative figure. It means one who represents. Now, in the Greek, the word was icon. It actually is the same word that Jesus uses when he says, show me a coin. Whose icon is on this coin? Whose icon? So the icon is also a representative figure, but it's in the Greek. So basically, the icon, the tselem of Caesar, would stand at the gates wherever you, in any Roman city, and it was a marker of where Caesar ruled. A few years back, I was in Croatia, and in Croatia, I had the opportunity to go to an awesome museum. And this was a little tiny museum, literally one room. And they had a really great coin collection. And this coin collection was a collection of coins from the Roman era. And on each of these coins, you could see the tselem of the Caesars. So because I've seen the coins, I know what Nero looked like. That's kind of cool, right? Well, did it ever occur to you that you, all of us, you, we, were created to be image bearers, representative figures, markers of where God rules? That when people look at us, they should know what God looks like. And God said, multiply and fill the earth. Why do you think that was? Well, maybe it was because God wanted the whole earth to know this is where God rules. The whole earth. Now, there's something important here to understand is that when the original writer, and actually it's writers, they now believe a lot, most scholars now believe, that, and no matter if you're evangelical or liberal in your theology, you believe, most scholars believe that Genesis was actually written by two or three writers, or sets of writers. And in fact, Genesis 1 in particular was written by a company of priests. Now this company of priests was coming out of the Babylonian exile, which means they were coming out of 70 years of oppression. Somebody say oppression.
Oppression.
They were coming out from 70 years of oppression and going into ruling, into the temple. Remember, there was no separation of church and state there. So they were about to rule. And it was in the midst of that transition that they wrote this text, Genesis 1, as doctrine. And I believe that they wrote it with the principal question, how now shall we rule? And they're looking at this and they see, they actually declare. And if they declare something subversive, that every single human being is made in the image of God. And this is in direct contradiction to the Babylonians, who believed, just like every other people group in the area, or in the world at that time, that the only representative figures on earth were the kings, the queens, the nobility, the royals. But no, said the priests. Every single human being is made in the image of God. Everyone! The taxi driver who drove me to the airport, the homeless man sleeping out on the street somewhere in Grand Rapids, the mother who was trying to feed her children and who was trying to escape domestic abuse, every last one is made in the image of God. And then there's another implication here, because there's something else that comes up in the text. In the same breath, God says, and let them have dominion. Now, that word dominion has been sorely misunderstood through the ages. The word dominion has been understood by some to mean dominate, even unto obliteration. That you can do whatever you want to do because you are made in the image of God and we are the pinnacle of creation. And so whatever we say goes. But we forget that we were made in the likeness of God. We are not God. God is God, not us. We are created. We are creature. Just like the sea monsters. Just like the plants and animals. We are part of creation, not above it.
That's right.
We are part of it. And so when we exercise dominion, it is also supposed to be in God's likeness.
That's right.
And God's dominion is loving. It is characterized by love, by servanthood, by protection, by provision for all. No one under God's dominion goes without care or provision. No one. And we see that clearly in Genesis 1. And God says, let them have dominion. And so there's a few different implications here, and then we will get into our core text. First, that all people are made in the image of God. Second, that all humanity is created with the call and the capacity to exercise dominion. Now just take that in for a moment. All humanity is created with the call and the capacity to exercise dominion. Now, there's a third implication here, that when we govern in a way that limits the capacity of human beings to exercise dominion, then we are also limiting the image of God on earth. When we govern in a way that oppresses or brings about poverty, we are oppressing and impoverishing the image of God on earth. Let's jump to Matthew. Matthew 25 is our text, but we're going to start in 23 just to understand the context of Matthew 25. In 23, Jesus is in the temple, and Jesus is going back and forth with the Pharisees and scribes and Sadducees. He's in the heart. The whole of Matthew has been pointing toward this moment. You know, there's this moment where Jesus turns his face toward Jerusalem. Ah, it's like, ooh, we've been waiting for this moment, and Jesus goes into Jerusalem. And you know, there's that moment where Jesus looks at the temple and then goes inside. And what does Jesus find? Jesus finds craziness. Jesus finds filth. Jesus finds exploitation of people. And actually, what we have to understand in order to understand this text is to understand the Pharisees themselves were actually the most powerful of all of the Sanhedrin. And the way the Sanhedrin was working at this point was that they were, and the Pharisees in particular, they were the keepers of the law. They were all about the purity of the law. But the problem was, they were confusing the law of men with the law of God. They were saying that we have to uphold Caesar's law as much as we have to uphold Moses' law. And purity and holiness would be accounted to us in however much we upheld Caesar's law as much as we upheld God's law, Moses' law.
Thank you for listening today to this 20-minute sample of NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. Just a reminder that you can access the full-length version of this and all NACSW podcasts at no cost by simply becoming a member of NACSW or by ordering a copy of this podcast at a reasonable cost on NACSW's online bookstore. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops, which provide CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, and our online continuing education program. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in to our podcast session today.